Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's daily political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm now joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Today, Donald Trump has promised to prosecute those who leaked intelligence about the Manchester bomber to the US media, after Theresa May warned that the leaks could undermine the special relationship. So, James, what's behind these leaks and how did it happen?
Well, what has happened is that there's been a succession of leaks in the American press of details of the investigation. First of all, the name of the attacker appeared in the American press before the British police were ready to release it. And then pictures of the bomb device appeared in the New York Times. And this has kind of created kind of immense irritation on the British side. Now, what we should be clear about is this isn't a kind of blanket end to intelligence sharing. I mean, intelligence sharing is the entire cornerstone of the special relationship. What this is Greater Manchester Police themselves not directly sharing information with the Americans anymore. I think Theresa May said she's going to confront Donald Trump about this issue when she sees him at the NATO summit. I think she will find, odd to put these words together, but Donald Trump, contrite. Donald Trump has had his own issues with the American intelligence community with leaks in recent weeks and months. And I think that Trump might well relish the opportunity to kind of to hit out at two of his favourite targets, which is the American intelligence community and the New York Times. But I think there is, I think the irritation at the leaks was profound. But it is worth remembering that this nearly always happens. I remember I was working in the US after the 7/7 attacks, and it was remarkable how sitting there you knew more than people here, because the American press just started publishing kind of everything. I mean, it is a much the American security services and law enforcement are just far leakier than our own domestic versions.
It's sort of been made sound like it's the government stopping passing intelligence, but it's just Manchester.
No, I mean, this is if that was the case, that would be massive, because the special relationship is at its heart an intelligence sharing relationship. This is Greater Manchester Police and Counter-Terrorism Police not passing information. It doesn't apply to GCHQ or MI5.
Katie, Theresa May has just arrived at the NATO summit in Brussels. What do you think are going to be the key topics of discussion there?
Well, she said that she's going to be pushing NATO to do more to tackle terrorism. So I think we're just going to see probably a continuation of her statements over the past few days, and also trying to work out like what more can actually be done. Also, we have this supposed confrontation with Donald Trump, where she is going to be telling President Trump that, you know, intelligence that we do share with the US must be treated securely.
And James, we've also today heard about these 5 terror attacks that have been foiled in the last 10 weeks. Does that suggest that what happened in Manchester was a security failure?
I think what we saw today was the security services responding to the newspaper front pages today, which kind of somehow suggested that this would be an intelligence failure. You know, I mean, the Telegraph said 5 opportunities missed to stop it. The Times said MI5 knew. I mean, what the security services are trying to say is, look, we have stopped 5 attacks since the Westminster attack 3 months ago. You know, the sheer volume of the threat we are dealing with, some things are implicit in their comment is that some things are going to get through. I think there are, though, going to be questions asked, because the more we learn about the Manchester attacker, the less he seems like someone radicalised in their own bedroom and more like someone who is part of a kind of global network. You know, we hear of him having been to Libya and then transited through Turkey and Germany on the way back. We hear of alleged connections of his family to Islamist groups in Libya, which have led to his father and his brother being arrested there. So I think there are going to be more and more questions asked. But I think there is a point here. And this is why fundamentally you have to deal with the ideology, because you're never going to be able to have 100% success rate, either in guarding targets. There are simply too many of them. When people want to just kill as many people as possible, you aren't going to be able to guard every pop concert or every sporting fixture in the country with kind of airline-style security. And equally, there are going to be too many people to keep tabs on 24/7. So I think that is ultimately why the ideological struggle against the kind of grievance culture that leads people down this path towards extremism and radicalisation, that's what has to be won.
Katie, despite the campaigns not officially starting again till tomorrow, UKIP have today launched their manifesto. What was in it?
Yes, so UKIP have gone a day early. They said it was important that the democratic process continued. They basically made it all about challenging Islamist extremism. And they suggested that Theresa May must bear some responsibility for the attack. Suzanne Evans, who said this, appeared to try and row back on the claim later on in the launch, when she said that actually it's only the terrorists who really have the responsibility. But it does show how they're kind of, I mean, they've been accused of political point scoring on it, but how they, in a way, think they can turn the situation to their advantage politically, whether that's, you know, calculated or just dealing with the facts. And they're, you know, planning to say that this wouldn't have happened under a UKIP government. They're suggesting May didn't do enough. And I think that's something that we have to see how the Tories deal with that when they get back on the campaign, which will be tomorrow.
And James, do you think UKIP are politically nimble enough for this strategy to work?
Oh, I think it's worth remembering that back at the beginning of the campaign, UKIP were trying to get to the kind of the right of the political consensus and the right of the government on this question of Islam and integration. You know, they started their campaign by talking about banning the burqa and all that kind of stuff. And they seem to be morphing into something that we see a lot on the continent, a kind of a political party that almost defines itself by its hostility to unintegrated Islam. But I think that you see where they missed Nigel Farage today, because they are trying to do something in some ways. They are trying to get into that space, and they are now trying to get into that space after a terrorist attack, which is obviously not an easy thing to do. It's very easy for that to come across as unseemly. And I think you need to be quite skillful to do that. And I wasn't quite sure that they managed to pull that off today, or that the people they're sending out to talk about this have the kind of name recognition. You know, I mean, there is absolutely no doubt that Nigel Farage, for good or ill, you know, acted as a kind of magnet to television cameras, and he was able to get the point across to people. I don't think that Suzanne Evans or Paul Nuttall, for all their other skills, have that purchase on the public mind yet.
James, when the campaigns do start tomorrow, what do you think the tone will be?
I think the initial tone will be relatively measured. We are still in a situation, it's worth remembering, when the official position is that a terrorist attack on the UK is imminent. I don't think anyone wants to be full-on political mudslinging in those circumstances. And so I think if you look at the way in which Amber Rudd responded to UKIP launch today, it was kind of like, oh, but this isn't helpful at this time. So I presume, and what the Tories are indicating, is that they will restart the campaign in a kind of relatively restrained way. I do think it's right that the campaigns have started. I mean, it does look rather like Jeremy Corbyn bounced the Tories into getting the campaigns going again by saying essentially that Labour were restarting on Friday regardless. And I do think that is the right thing. We are less than, in two weeks today, people will be voting. And I think we need to have a proper election campaign. I also think that we should discuss the issues that come out of this. I mean, I think lots of us were shocked by the events in Manchester. I think it's hard to claim that we were surprised. And I think as a society, we need to discuss how we are going to deal with this problem, what we want to do, where we want to draw the boundaries between security and liberty. So I think that is, I think these are, I do hope that we don't have an election campaign in which people feel that they can't discuss anything that comes out of these attacks. Because we do need to have this conversation, because if it doesn't happen in the open, it will happen elsewhere. And that will become, you know, any conversation that takes place in a closed room can become fetid quite quickly.
And also, I think we saw yesterday this beginning to happen. Diane Abbott was quizzed by Jon Snow on her voting record on things, you know, like terrorist watches, the prevent strategy and aspects like this. And also Jeremy Corbyn's was brought up and she said, you know, this isn't helpful. But I think that is a theme we're going to see more of in the next few weeks, because there will be questions about how each party would deal with this.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And just a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. We've got a special subscription offer to The Spectator. If you get 12 issues for just £12, which includes full access to all of our website and apps, it now also comes with a moleskin notebook worth £20. To get this, just go to spectator.co.uk/podoffer.